You're listening to Every Voice Matters with Dori Francis, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Good morning. Good afternoon. This is Dori Francis with Every Voice Matters, and we are here every Thursday at 12 noon Mountain Time. Today, I want to thank the sponsor of our show, Lake Tahoe Preparatory School. They are located in California's beautiful Olympic Valley. And although school has started, they do offer rolling admissions. So you can still reach out to them by calling 530-583-8665. They are a co-educational college preparatory school serving about 80 students in grades 9 through 12. And they have a very robust curriculum for their students. And it has been approved by the University of California. They offer small class sizes, individual learning, outdoor sports year-round in their beautiful area. And their students actually receive a very rigorous academic experience. And they meet each student where they are on their academic journey. So please take time to research them, Lake Tahoe Preparatory School, and also give them a call at 530-583-8665. Today, I'd like to introduce our guest who happens to be local here in Boulder, Colorado, Tracy Markle. And hi, Tracy.
I'm happy to be here.
Yes. Tracy is a nationally renowned digital media addiction expert. And as we were just talking before the show, this topic, especially with what's been happening in the news recently, is on everybody's mind. And I think it's been talked about for years. Tracy is the founder and co-director of Digital Media Treatment and Education Center located in Boulder, Colorado. And they offer individual, couple, family, and group therapy to individuals and families impacted by technology use and digital media applications. And that can cover video games and social media. They also provide clinical consultations to those who live around the U.S. and around the globe. So Tracy is quite adamant in reaching everyone who needs her assistance. And there's a lot to cover today. Tracy's going to talk about the five types of digital media overuse, addiction, gaming, social media, pornography, compulsive spending, and information overload, which I think is really hitting a lot of people more than anything else, and how they impact mood, motivation, mental health, and healthy social engagement in children, young adults, and even older adults. So Tracy, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Why don't you share with our listeners a little bit about, the media overuse treatment you started, was it 2009?
Yes. Correct. Yeah, so I opened the Digital Media Treatment and Education Center in Boulder, as Dori said, and officially right around 2018. Prior to that, I was working with a number of high school and middle school and college students and started to see more and more complaints about online behaviors. As we know, with smart mobile devices, they didn't come out until 2007. So around 2009, I started to see it picking up steam and causing a lot of issues, especially for our young people. So we decided to create a treatment arm, and that's what we do here, and really enjoy the work and are excited about what we have to offer the individuals and families we work with.
You know, what I'm hearing a lot from families, especially through this whole COVID episode, is how it's affecting kids academically. You know, and I've even heard from the local high school kids where I live here, Legacy High School. They actually didn't enjoy doing all of their schooling online. It took away from what they thought used to be an enjoyment of being online. And now it became something they didn't want to do. How are you seeing this affecting the academic world?
Yeah, so I've seen it hit our middle school age group probably the hardest, at least in my world that I'm working in. I'll often hear from the high school and middle school students that they felt like it was a lost year for them. They didn't learn anything. they'll complain about missing out on concepts, understanding math concepts, not being able to remember. And we have to remember, this is what I remind them about and their parents, this is an extremely high stress time.
Oh my gosh, anxiety and depression is at an all-time high. Yeah.
Yeah. So when we're anxious, when we're depressed, when we're isolated, we don't remember things as well. We're not the best learners in that environment. And so not only were they having to be behind screens, which is hard for the teenage brain anyway, to learn and stay focused and concentrate, they were also more isolated from their peers.
And, you know, those that are struggling too with ADD, ADHD, or kids that might be on the spectrum, I found were especially challenged by these changes of trying to learn online. And it really wasn't applicable for them at all. So as you said, yes, there was a whole missed year of school.
Yeah. And for our kids that are fall under that neurodevelopmental window of ADHD, specific learning disabilities and autism spectrum, especially with ADHD and autism spectrum, they tend to have more of a novelty seeking brain, or they're seeking rewards and stimulation. And the kids on the autism spectrum are exceptionally skillful when it comes to visual abilities. So that's why video games are so attractive to them and engaging and immersive. And so what I often, Dory, tell people is, imagine being a teen who has ADHD or they're on the autism spectrum and they're supposed to do mundane, boring schoolwork online, not engaged in a classroom, which many of them weren't. Of course they're going to play video games instead.
Of course they are.
Instead. I would if I were them.
So, and not just the kids, I mean, what are you seeing in families as a whole? Because, you know, parents as well are becoming more and more addicted to social media, online screen time, Pinterest, Instagram. I don't think they sometimes realize how much time they're also spending online, holding that phone in their hand 24/7, not putting it down, not engaging.
Yeah, it's extremely stressful period of time for families. I've been working as a therapist for many years, and I've never seen this level of intense problems in families. And I've worked with addictions and compulsive behaviors most of my career. And this last year has just created a whole new level of stress for families. And parental fatigue is at an all-time high. And so for us, you know, it's really hard to help your son or daughter or your child in general with their mental health if you're also struggling with your own. And so a lot of parents are falling in line behind their children and most of our society and spending a lot of time online. Part of that is habitual behavior. And it's just normal for us to look at our phone all the time because of the way devices and digital media are created by Silicon Valley. But the other is, I need a break. And I'll have parents tell me that. I just need an hour on Facebook. I need a break from my child.
Mm-hmm. You know, in the social connection piece too, I'm seeing people not socially connecting. And this is nothing new. It's been going on for years. But, you know, you walk into a restaurant or you see a group of kids sitting on the lawn, they're all texting to each other right there rather than just speaking to each other, making eye contact, having conversations. And I've asked them about that and they said, well, we don't have anything to say. And I says, but you are saying something. And they just feel like it's a whole different mode of communication.
Yeah. It's definitely puts kids in a nonverbal kind of, almost like a nonverbal disability, if you think of it like that, where they're struggling to understand nonverbal communication because so much of it occurs from behind the screen. And we all know with nonverbal communication, that's a majority of communication. So a lot of our young people are missing out on those cues and those signals and are struggling to understand each other.
Or just facial expressions even.
Exactly.
They're not looking at each other.
They're not looking at each other. And You know, what I often say is this is normal for them. And they are used to online communication and connection, where in the 80s or before, we spent a lot of time only talking on our landlines, which was pretty boring, or seeing each other face to face. And so we can't, it's not their fault. It's just become part of the reality of their generation or generations. And we as parents and adults need to work really hard to understand what they're doing on social media, understand those platforms. You know, Dory, we talk a lot about kids becoming good digital citizens. School districts talk about that. They really promote it. But we truly can't have the kids be good digital citizens and engage appropriately online if the adults and parents don't understand what's going on in that world too, because we still have to be mentors to them and help them figure out how to maneuver through life.
So what are you seeing as some of the highest risk factors around this change, Tracy?
With and Dory, you mean in reference to digital media overuse and addiction issues?
Yes.
Thank you for clarifying that. The number one high-risk diagnosis that we still see and we've seen for years is ADHD. Those people in general, adults alike, are high risk for screen immersion. And then we have the common coexisting factors of anxiety and depression. Our people in general have social anxiety, are more apt to want to engage online because it's safer and it's more secure, and they can just, you know, hit the escape button at any time to leave a situation that makes them uncomfortable, where in real life that's really hard to do. And so those are some of our key areas that we're seeing that are, you know, high risk coexisting factors.
I know that we have a lot of questions that people, you know, submitted. In fact, I had to cut off the questions because there were so many. But, you know, a lot of people were asking, you know, what kind of treatment is available for this? And I don't think that they actually understand what kind of treatment is needed, or they just want to lump it all into one situation. Well, they need to stop using the computer, or they need to stop using their phone. And it's a lot more complicated than that. And as you said, this is the world that the kids are growing up in, living in. So how do we find that balance, and what's available for both families, you know, and young adults and adolescents to, you know, get some help around this situation? Yeah.
Absolutely. So I'll start by sharing some programs that are available out there, including the program I have here in Boulder, Colorado. So for our people who are listening and viewing in, if you live in Colorado, we're able to engage with you in a therapeutic way and provide psychotherapy services, even if it's virtual and you don't live local to Boulder. And that, like Dory said earlier, we do individual, family. We work a lot with just parents and helping them shore up the home and coming up with expectations and consequences for their child and really understanding what type of devices they should have access to and what makes sense in that home environment. And for those of you who live outside the state of Colorado, we are able to provide consultation to you and point you in the right direction of how to get started and potentially help you locate people in your area who specialize in this. I have another company that I work within, and Dory knows me well, in this company called Collegiate Coaching Services. And Collegiate Coaching Services is coaching. So for a lot of our young people, high school and college, the team of coaches understand digital media overuse and addiction really well. And they help their clients figure out how to manage screen time and perform academically in jobs, life skills. And that's a service that can be offered throughout the United States because coaching, it's not psychotherapy. So that service is appropriate for people who maybe are not meeting the criteria for addiction. And if you meet criteria for addiction, we definitely want to find a treatment center or program for you. Just to mention a couple other programs in the state, in the United States, we have the Restart program up in Washington State, which is a residential treatment center for
they offer.
Adults and teens. I work with Hillary Cash, who is one of the owners and founders.
Frequently. She's phenomenal.
Phenomenal. I have a lot of respect for them. And then we have Open Sky Wilderness that we work with a lot in outside of Durango, and we've trained their team on this issue and how to work with it in the field and clinically. And I have a lot of respect for the work they do too. And those are the two that I often come to my mind, Dory, when families are asking, but I often, you know, rely on educational consultants too. So I'm curious, what comes to mind for you, Dory? Is there anything to add to that list?
You know, I mean, Restart usually is my first go-to for both adolescents, you know, and adults. And it's because in speaking with, you know, residential treatment centers or even young adult transitional, they don't have the training. They have some knowledge, they have some awareness, but they really don't have the depth of what, you know, Restart is offering. And I have been following them since day one, Cosette and Hillary, and I've had a chance to visit with them. And, you know, they really, as far as I'm concerned, are one of the best. Open Sky also, I know that they have had training from you. I've heard, you know, that Outback Therapeutic Treatment is another one that is, you know, becoming more knowledgeable in this area. But I really would like to see, you know, more of the residential adolescent treatment centers, you know, welcome you in for training, to become more knowledgeable about this in a more in-depth way, because this isn't going away. It's not temporary. It's not going to change. The world is going to continue to grow in using technology. And I think it's going to just get more complicated in a lot of ways. And it is the way that these kids are going to live their life going forward.
Right.
There are some great aspects to it as well, as far as employment and things that they can learn. And, you know, just like with anything else, though, there can be some very devastating overuse that can just destroy somebody's life.
Well, and I appreciate you highlighting that, because I think we all agree. I mean, look at the format we're using right now. Technology is an amazing development through our history. And it's something that provides us with a lot of opportunity that we didn't used to have. And that's also what makes it so challenging, especially for our high-risk groups, our children, high school kids, young adult. Our college students are our highest risk group.
And I can speak to that.
Yeah, so college students, if you think about it, they, generally speaking, have been at home, parent structure, accountability, and then they go to college. They're away from home for the very first time. And they're supposed to manage their screen time and learn how to do that. And they're not. It is extremely hard, especially with stress being high. More than ever, I think young adults are dealing with more stress than we've ever seen.
I agree.
Because of COVID, but you know, all of our issues that are going on out in the world.
I've seen more college students in the last 2 years fail and drop out in their first year than I've ever seen before. And when I speak to them, the words that come out of their mouth are anxiety and depression.
It's a theme, and it's almost like an identifying factor anymore if you're young at all, that you're anxious at the very least. And that's here in Boulder, Colorado. We work with the University of Colorado a lot, and we're hearing that throughout. And you know, the side effects of that, serious mental health and addiction issues, not only screens, but substance abuse too. But I wanted to just mention, you know, we have this as a tool, but for a lot of our people who are vulnerable to overuse, kids with ADHD, adults with ADHD, anxiety, depression, isolation, that's what makes this so hard for families to deal with, for teachers, for any of us who are in this world, because it's needed, but it also can legitimately create an addiction. So then how do you do that? You know, that's what a lot of people say is, how do we do this then? If my child needs a computer for school, and then I can't get them off the video games, how do I handle that? And it is an extremely difficult process.
It's very challenging. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, we were talking before the show started about the word information overload. And I'm starting to hear that from all kinds of people. I actually was speaking to a person earlier this week who's 75. So we all know us older people did not grow up with technology.
Yes.
And she says, I'm in information overload because she's on her iPad looking at stuff all day long. And that's where she's getting her news. And that's where she's doing her shopping. And then, of course, you know, you're being inundated with emails from every website that you visit because now they've got you. And she says, I'm ready to just chuck this thing in the toilet. And, you know, can you talk a little bit more about information overload?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So information overload is one of the five types of digital media overuse and addiction that we see frequently. And like you said, Dory, it's on the rise only because especially COVID really pushed that along because we relied on our screens so much for everything.
Yeah, just to connect. And so,
yeah, absolutely. So information overload by definition is spending a lot of time on sites like news sites, sports sites, video like Netflix streaming and YouTube. Those are good examples. Where the way, and again, I'm going to speak to the algorithms, and Silicon Valley sets these up for us to stay on. That's the intention, right? Well, and so they want us to keep watching and keep watching and keep
heard training. That. We've just heard about the whistleblowers coming out. And
that's right.
Anybody who hasn't seen Social Dilemma, watching that, and it's very eye-opening in how they are controlling what's going on. Yeah.
If you're a parent with a young person with a smartphone and you haven't watched Social Dilemma, I really encourage it. Yeah, it is, like Dory said, I think it was made very well and shares a lot of that behind the scenes information we need to understand before we give a smartphone to a child.
Yeah, because now these elementary school kids have phones. It's starting very young.
And what I like to say is, because parents will say, hey, Tracy, how do I know when it's time to give my child a smartphone? And the first thing I say is, are you okay talking to your child about sex, about pornography? And I'll stop there. And most parents will say, no, I'm not comfortable. Well, then don't give them a smartphone.
Right. Because it's right there.
And it's a small computer, right? You get everything. Yeah. More than ever.
Mm-hmm. Let's see if we can get to some of these questions and then, you know, expand out too on information. I know there's so much. We're not going to get through it all today. We're going to have you come back to keep talking about this.
I'm happy to do it.
Good. Allison in Utah asks, what is cyberbullying?
Yeah, great question, Allison. It's a common issue that we're seeing. So, simply put, it's bullying through technology. So it might be somebody on Facebook, Snapchat, which is a common social media site, communication, a way of communicating with each other. It's, you know, we often use the word troll or trolling, where mean things are said to people, they're intimidated, they're threatened. One phrase I like to use, Dory, is called digital disinhibition. So when we're behind a screen and no one can see us, we're more apt to say mean things and bad things than we would if we were face to face. So where bullying behavior is common amongst our young people in middle school and high school, it's even more common online because they don't have anything preventing them from saying or doing what maybe they wouldn't do if they were face to face. It's a serious issue. We're seeing a lot of extreme acting out behavior because of cyberbullying, including pretty high rates of suicide attached to being cyberbullied.
Yeah, that was some of the questions that came in, as people seeing that race in suicide and very concerned how technology is playing into that as well.
Yeah, here in Colorado, we've had a number of research studies completed, and our local school districts are talking about the high rate of suicide that we have right now, and that's partly COVID related. I'm seeing it more than I've ever seen in my career, and I've been in the field for about 30 years. It's a large amount, and because, to your point, Dory, high rates of anxiety and depression and isolation. And I think that just exacerbated the issues over, you know, the 18 months we were pretty much in lockdown or thereabouts. Extremely, extremely difficult on our young people.
Amanda here in Colorado says, are there any books for parents to learn about these addictions? How do we get trained in knowing more? Our kids are outsmarting us.
Oh, I love that question, Allison. The first thing that comes to mind, I think of my really good friend and colleague, Melanie Hempe, who created and runs an organization called Screen Strong. And it's a nonprofit. And she is a parent herself and had a child with an addiction to screens. And she has, you know, here we are talking about technology, but Facebook support groups. She does support groups all the time virtually in her area, North Carolina. And so as a parent, she does such a nice job of educating, and it's no cost to you. She's coming out soon with this amazing course that she's offering parents that will have some kind of nominal fee attached.
Oh, please let me know about that. I'll make sure that I post that.
It's amazing, Dory. She allowed me to be a beta tester for her, and I am just so impressed. So I encourage you all to take a look at her work as a parent. And also, we also, you know, it's a paid service, but we work with parents all the time in educating them and supporting them to learn the information and the knowledge that you need to know. I love parent coaching. That's one of my favorite things to do, and spend time with parents, just really digging in and figuring out the best plan for your child. There are so many great books out there. Victoria Dunkley is one of my favorites. She's an integrative psychologist, actually out of LA area in California. And she's written a book on electronic screen syndrome is what she calls it. And for those of you with younger kids, she has all kinds of plans mapped out in her book. She's excellent to look into. And so that's one fabulous book. And I think, you know, Doria, what I could do if you want is I can send you a list of books that I find really helpful.
I'll post it on your page, and then I can also add them to the book list that's on the site.
Okay. Why don't I do that? So you have a nice list that you can pick from.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. You know, and I think, as you said, just because people are on Facebook providing support groups and so forth, technology isn't all bad. It's just, as with anything else, it's in how you use it, whether you use it or abuse it.
Yes,
I mean, it is a great tool that we have.
Well, and it's really meant for adults. You know, when you think about it, now that we understand brain science, reward systems, and persuasive design is what it's called, as far as like the reward systems that technology and digital media is set up to trigger. So for our kids who struggle with impulse control, just because of where they are in brain development, they're not able to manage it nearly right, like we want them to. So that it comes down to that. It's not the kids' fault. It's their
brain development. Do you feel that overuse of technology can interfere with brain development for these adolescents?
Absolutely. You know, there's this researcher out of California, UCLA, I believe, Patricia Greenfield, and she's written a lot about technology and the impacts on learning. And she actually she has this phrase, situational ADHD, where people, kids in particular, can be on the screens a lot, especially engage in fast-paced video games or video watching. And it can actually, depending on the level of immersion, which is a lot of time, they can look like they have ADHD when they actually don't. So what we like to do is when we're faced with a case of whether somebody has ADHD or not, is removing the screens, those immersive applications like fast-paced video games, video watching, and we'll see a lot of stabilization occur when we do that. Even autism spectrum, there are people out there saying, boy, we're starting to see that where young kids from a very young age are in front of screens. They're not able to trigger the mirror neurons that are needed for eye-to-eye, face-to-face contact with others, which helps us understand social cues and communication. The screen inhibits that. So they're starting to see more and more cases of, is this really ASD or not? And we need to remove the screens for a period of time to see if the child can recoup those really important developmental processes and get back on track with their development.
Yeah, I mean, we all see that there are very small children already being put in front of a screen. And, you know, one of the things, and I brought this up before in other shows where we've talked about technology, it just makes my heart so sad is when I see a parent out with their child and the parent's on their phone and they're not engaging with their child. And I just think, wow, this time is going by so fast, number one, but you're missing out on that engagement with your child and just you're being present in your surroundings. It's all becoming disconnected. It's so sad.
Well, in when you think of attachment, so we talk about attachment and the bonding that occurs between a parent and a child and even a teacher and a child. And that's why they also surmise suicide rates are going up because teachers aren't bonding with their students like they used to because the screens are required so much. That interactive engagement that we used to have has been limited a great deal in general. Not all schools are this way, but in general. And I think, Dory, the attachment issues are on the rise. And I also think that's partly why we're seeing an increase in mental health issues is because the screen is inhibiting healthy attachment. Mm-hmm. So when parents are looking at the screen rather than their infant, which is needed for healthy attachment, they're interrupting that process as well as with younger children.
And then the kids act out because they're wanting attention. Yes. And it gets labeled as a behavioral issue. Yeah.
Well, and what I see as a side effect of that, Dory, is the kids will often tell me, I don't know what to do if my mom and dad are on the screens. I'll just go get on a screen. And instead of the parent, and generally speaking, instead of that caretaker being the primary source of self-soothing, they go to the screen and that becomes a primary source of self-soothing, which is in part why it's so hard for kids to get away from the screen because they feel better when they're on it.
Yep. Even I have a service dog, and even my service dog, when I pick up my laptop, it's like she walks away like, oh, yeah, I don't want to be around you if you're going to be on that thing.
She's a smart dog, isn't she? I like that dog already.
Yeah, it's very telling. And it's like, I have to work right now. And it's like, yeah.
That's sweet.
Anne in California asks, my teenage son thinks his video game friends are real friends. I'm concerned who these people really are. When I limit his time, he cries and has a tantrum. He even swears at me and yells. This just doesn't feel normal. He's 13. What do I do?
Yes. And it's a challenge I'm hearing all the time right now. And even before COVID, but especially after and during COVID, because I guess we're kind of still in it. So kids will find people to connect with online. And if you were here in my office, I would ask you a number of questions. I would say, okay, do they have friends they see in person? That's first and foremost, number one, when it comes to healthy development. And that also keeps anxiety and depression at bay when we can connect face to face
with real people.
with real people that I can see, not just through the screen like you and I are doing, Dory. Like we don't think this is even nearly as good as in person. What a lot of the kids are doing is they're meeting people through games, so they're not even seeing them.
And they don't know who they are.
They don't know. They could be anyone, any age, right, from all over the world.
Right.
And so I would also ask you, does your son have social anxiety? Is there a reason why it's more comfortable to connect through the game than in person? Has he dealt with any bullying behaviors? Is he not getting recognized in school academically? Academic achievement is one of the number one protective factors for young people to not immerse into screens in a destructive way. So we want to make sure in that environment they're getting recognized by teachers, they feel connected, they're in clubs. And so one last thing, Dori, I want to say about this issue is there's really three important psychological innate needs kids need to meet to be healthy humans. That's feeling a sense of autonomy. They can make their own choices and decisions, and they're not told what to do all the time by their parents. These are responsible choices and decisions.
Right.
Competence. They feel good about their achievements, like academically, sports, clubs. They have an area in their life where they feel competent. And then relatedness. They have people that really care about them, that are people in their actual world versus virtual. And so, Anne, if those needs aren't being met in real life, outside of the game or online, these kids are going to find a way to get that met through the screen every time. So I just want to mention those three areas as really critical areas for us to be aware of.
Anne Marie in Colorado says, can being addicted to social media cause physical symptoms?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think when you think of any kind of addiction, if you truly meet the criteria for addiction, which is a small percentage of the population in all actuality, that's why we refer to it as overuse.
Right.
Because that's more people. But still, you're going to have eye strain, which is a major issue we're seeing, especially in kids, where more and more they're having to get corrective vision, like contacts and glasses because of the closeness of the screen. Most people use social media on their phone, which is a smaller screen. You have to hold it closer. They have something called text neck, where you're looking down and causing neck strain.
Right.
Carpal tunnel of your thumbs, as well as wrists, back issues. And then a lot of people, their posture in general is just horrible when you are looking. If you can look at yourself on your phone. I had to actually hire somebody during COVID to come in and set up my desk and my computer because I was having all kinds of back issues. Because I had to be in front of the screen like everyone else. So it's a serious issue.
Yeah. What about the things that you're wearing in your ears? I don't do it. Bugs me to have something in my ear, but I know people who put them in first thing in the morning and they're in there all day until they go to bed at night.
It actually will not help the brain to fully develop. So depending on what age you are, we all know the brain goes through a pruning period, and the largest and almost last pruning period happens at the age of around 14. And all parts of our brain need to be accessed. And so what they're finding when we wear the AirPods in our ears or whatever they are, or the big earphones, the headphones, they're not bringing in all of the natural sounds around them in general.
Very
and impacted.
Yeah.
It can impact their hearing, but it also is a form of isolation in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
And we do have people coming into treatment with us for that reason. I listen to too many podcasts. My partner's really upset with me because my earbuds are in all the time, and I am not a helpful parent.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Barkley in New Hampshire asks, my son is ASD and the internet games actually seem to help calm him down. Is this okay?
So this is a great question. I hear this all the time, especially with the young people we work with on the spectrum. So limited game time, no more than 45 minutes a day, especially with strategy-based games, can have a helpful effect on learning and development. It can increase cognitive flexibility, which is important for kids on the spectrum, because they can tend to be pretty black and white and rigid. And it also can help improve mathematical abilities, but no more than 45 minutes. And that's why I'm often cautious of saying this, because these games aren't developed to play for only 45 minutes.
They're nonstop.
They're nonstop and extremely immersive. So for your son, I have no doubt he feels better when he's playing games because of the level of reward systems involved in these video games and the release of dopamine, which is a feel-good neurotransmitter. He also might be getting a sense of achievement from the games, and he feels good doing them. So what I caution you on is that it hasn't become a self-soothing behavior. And I would, if you were here, I'd ask you how many hours a day, if it's hours, is he spending on that? And if it's more than an hour or two a day, I'd say you need to be a little more worried, because we want him to be able to have other ways of self-soothing besides the screen.
So is that really the recommendation, Tracy, for kids on social media, for parents to limit it to 1 to 2 hours a day? I mean, when I don't know I've ever talked to any parent who says their kid's only on, or that they're even on, when it's like 7 hours a day.
Yeah, because again, the way these are developed, they're meant to keep us on for hours and hours and hours. That's the intent behind the technology and the application. So what research finds, there's a woman named Jean Twenge. She wrote iGen.
I read that book. That's a great book. Yeah.
Excellent. And I love Jean's work because she studied social media for years. And what she found is when you're on social media more than 2 hours a day, depression increases. And when you're on it less than 2 hours a day, your mood regulates. So this is all ages, especially our teens. And our teen girls are at the highest risk for immersion, although men and boys in general are struggling too. And so when you look at mental health, 2 hours or less a day should be the max. And that's hard to do if your child
has... Boy, is that hard to do, yeah.
...without limits. And as adults, we have to stay really conscientious about that.
Betsy in Colorado says, my daughter spent a year at online school, and ever since, she wants to be online now all the time. She's 14, almost 15. She never spent this much time online before COVID. How do I pull her back?
Oh, that is extremely difficult. Sounds like there maybe had been some kind of habit developed for her where it's much more of a comfortable world for her to spend online than away from it. And it's up to you to start setting those limits and boundaries to help her get off of that screen, which is hard. And it can be a volatile situation where the child gets really upset and angry. And what that tells me is you're doing the right thing if they get upset and angry when you set the boundaries. And depending on the level of outburst that the child might have is indicative of the level of attachment they have to the screen, and also problem behavior. And I think some of you listening in may say, well, my child really does react, maybe threatens.
Yes, I've heard that from parents.
Yeah, property damage is a common issue, threatening to kill themselves. And that's an indicator that you need intervention and you need help.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Chad in Colorado says, do you think all the mass shootings are tied to social media in any way? I know my son says there are games that you can play where you get to be a mass shooter. This is so scary to me.
And Chad, you're onto something there. There's a lot of work being done behind the scenes. So when you think of video games, the police force and our militaries are all trained on simulators.
Right.
So when to shoot, how to shoot, but they have rules and they have commanders saying what to do and what not to do it. These video games are really no different. Our first person shooter games, but the kids don't have anyone there to tell them when to shoot and when not. There's no rules of the game. So they just, we refer to them as run and gun. They can just shoot and do whatever they want. The American Psychological Association has not identified that there's a direct relationship between violent behavior and video games, but they have identified there's a direct relationship between violent video games and aggressive behavior. And so there's a relationship. You can read the study and the research by that APA. I think it came out in 2015, if I remember right. It's the most studied area, violent video games and the impact on society. So there's a lot out there on
There's so much out there. And it just keeps happening. You know, we're not going to get through all of our questions. I'm definitely going to invite you back. There's just, I think, continued communication about this. And there's going to be continued information, I think, coming out as well.
That's right.
And, by the next time that you're back again, we're going to have heard and learn a lot more, but it's just going to continue. I want to make sure, Tracy, that people know how to reach you for both your coaching and for your digital assistance. What's the best way for them to reach out to you? Where are you located? Where's your website? Okay. What number can they call? Let's give them all your information.
Great, Dory. So first I want to just throw this out there in case we have any professionals listening in, that we also have a training program for professionals. And so if you want to learn how to treat this issue or intervene or understand it, you can reach out and we can let you know about that. As far as the families that have a need for our type of support, you can, the main line that you can call is 303-635-6753. You can also email me, Tracy, T-R-A-C-Y, at digitalmediatreatment.com. Okay. Collegiate Coaching Services, you can reach us at the same phone number because we exist in the same building. So Collegiate Coaching is a coaching service that we offer around the U.S. Digital Media Treatment and Education Center is the treatment center in Boulder, Colorado. And for our families in Colorado, if you want to learn more about us, we offer no-cost consult. We'll jump on a phone or a Zoom call or meet with you in person and just kind of run through everything we have to offer.
Great. We have quite a few people from Colorado submit questions. So there's definitely, you know, a concern and a need. And I'll make sure all of your information as well is on your webpage so people can learn more and find you easily as well.
Great. Thanks, Dory. I really appreciate it.
Yes, I've so enjoyed having you here today, Tracy. And I will definitely be in touch with you, you know, for coming back again. And
I would love to. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me on today.
Good. Thank you. Next week, we're going to have an author on. Her name is Cynthia Hammer, and she has written a book called A Good Cause. It's really a powerful tale of several families who have senior relatives in need of care. And for anybody who is caretaking a senior relative or has had this experience, it's a wonderful book, A Good Cause, if you want to get it beforehand. Otherwise, we'll look forward to having Cynthia with us next week. I would once again like to thank Lake Tahoe Preparatory School for sponsoring our show today. And even though school has started, remember that they do offer rolling admission. You can actually call them at 530-583-8665 for more information. They're located in California's beautiful Olympic Valley. They are a co-educational preparatory school, college preparatory, serving 80 students in grades 9 through 12. They offer a robust curriculum that has been approved by the University of California, small class sizes, individual learning, and access to year-long outdoor sports in their beautiful area. All of their students receive a rigorous academic experience designed to meet them where they are in their learning experience. So again, please give them a call at 530-583-8665. Thank you, Lake Tahoe Preparatory School, for sponsoring our show today. And I leave you with this thought. Think good thoughts, speak good words, take good actions. These steps that will bring you more than you can ever imagine. Three simple steps. Thank you, everyone. I'll see you next week. Take care.
You're listening to Every Voice Matters with Dori Francis, only on LA Talk Radio.